We're roughly 10 games into the season. Is it time for a few teams to panic? Yes, welcome into another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, your daily source of news, notes, and updates for all things Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Troy Brock. You can find me on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. He's Drew Crabtree. You can follow him on the X Machine at Drew Crabtree 12. And we're going to talk about teams that may or may not be time for them to panic, even though we are roughly 10 games into the season. We're going to talk about the games that went down yesterday, and we are going to talk about the games that we have to look forward to on the slate today. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us a subscription. Turn on that notification icon so you can be notified when another episode goes live. If you're listening in on audio, give us a 5-star rating. Share the show with your friends. Send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their news, notes, and updates on all things Major League Baseball. And check out the First Pitch Podcast newsletter, where today's issue of the newsletter talked about the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. extension, talked about Ketel Marte hitting the injured list over the weekend, and talked about Blake Snell hitting the injured list over the weekend, as well as a few other notables from the weekend and things we have to look forward to today. So go subscribe to that. It is free to subscribe, though we do appreciate any paid subscriptions as they help keep the bills on around here. How you doing this morning, Drew?
I wish I woke up as Vladimir Guerrero's accountant today, because good Lord, good for him. That's awesome. You know, I love seeing stars get paid. I hope to have one of those in Cincinnati one day. Sad state of affairs. But no, yeah, good for Vladdy. I know that, like, last week someone asked him about a potential extension. He's like, I don't know, man. I just play baseball. I let the agent take care of it, and if it happens, you'll know, I'll know. I'm just trying to play baseball. Good for him. I like seeing the Toronto Blue Jays lock down their superstar. I was gonna pull it up, but I was honestly wondering what the lifetime earnings of Vladdy Sr. was, and then compare it to what Junior is. Well, I think while you're yapping away, I might look that up to see if Vladdy Jr. is already surpassed.
Yeah, it was absolutely a great signing for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as well as the Toronto Blue Jays. It's like I said, I wrote about it in the newsletter today, so we won't dive too much into it here on the podcast. But he is a superstar that is staying in Toronto, and they're going from being the spurned lover and always the bridesmaid to finally the bride, as they have finally landed a superstar. It was just not this past offseason, but the offseason before, where Airplane Watch was going on with Shohei Ohtani, and it turned out that Shohei Ohtani was not, in fact, on that airplane. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was, in fact, on that airplane. 14 years, $500 million, and how much money did Vladimir Guerrero Jr. make, more so than his dad, Vladimir Guerrero Sr.?
According to Baseball Reference, Vladdy Sr.'s career earnings was $125.5 million. So, wow. Needless to say, Jr. has surpassed it. Like, yeah. It's hilarious. In 1997, in his age 22 season, he made $150,000. It's always I love looking back at the older greats and to see what they made, then compare it to today. It's like you have a mid player who destroys what all time greats made back in the day. Vladdy Jr. is going to be he's significantly richer than his Hall of Fame daddy.
And, yeah,
good for him, man. Good for him.
Absolutely. Last thing here, you said Senior made $125 million over his career. Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s extension is four times that much with just the extension. That's awesome. But yeah, speaking of looking back on things, we're now going to look back on the games that we saw yesterday. Everybody played except for the Marlins and the Braves, as they were rained out, but we still got 15 games. Because the Cardinals and Red Sox played a doubleheader because they were rained out on Saturday. So a lot of games to go through, and we're going to start off with the Diamondbacks and the Nationals. Nationals won that one 5-4. They are now 3-6 on the year. And Corbin Burns is not off to a great start in his tenure with the Diamondbacks. He is 0-1 now with a 5.79 ERA. He took the L in that one, and the Nationals took 2 of 3 from the Diamondbacks over the weekend. And I'm telling y'all, been telling y'all all offseason so far, Nationals are going to be pesky this year. You got to keep an eye on them. Dodgers and Phillies. Phillies take 2 of 3 from the unbeatable Los Angeles Dodgers. And yeah, they won that one 8-7. It was a back and forth game. It included a Nick Castellanos grand slam, of course, after the stock market has been crashing. You knew it was coming at some point, and he provided a grand slam in this one yesterday. 8-7 final. The Phillies moved to 7-2. The Dodgers are 9-2, and the Phillies are also 7-2 against the Los Angeles Dodgers in the Shohei Ohtani era. So it's the best winning percentage that any team has against the Dodgers. The San Diego Padres have more wins, but they also have more losses because they play them more often. But yeah, the Phillies have not had any issues with the Dodgers since Shohei Ohtani joined them, and they continue to not have any issues with them this weekend. Yankees and Pirates. The Yankees dropped the finale, did not complete the sweep. Pirates win this one 5-4. Devin Williams took the L. He hasn't been great out of the bullpen since joining the Yankees to this point. He's 0-1 now with a 3.86 ERA, but the Pirates got another one in the win column. They are now 3-7. The Yankees are 6-3. The New York Mets swept the Toronto Blue Jays, even though they are now having their superstar for 14 more years after this one. The Mets moved to 6-3. Blue Jays are 5-5. Mets win that one 2-1. It was a very close series all the way throughout. I think only one game was really a major difference in the scoring, and I think it was 5-0 in that game on Friday, I believe. But yeah, good series there. Mets did sweep it. Max Kranick got the win. He has been fantastic for the Mets out of the bullpen, and Edwin Diaz picked up his second save of the year. White Sox and Tigers. Tigers moved to 5-4 with a 4-3 win over the White Sox. I'm pretty sure they completed the sweep in this one. White Sox are 2-7. Expect a lot more losses from the White Sox as the year progresses. Orioles and Royals. Royals won this one 4-1. Chris Bubich got the win. 2-0, 0.71 ERA for him. Carlos Estevez's sorry self got a save, his second of the year, and the Royals are now 4-5, and the Orioles are 4-6. More on the Orioles to come later. Astros and Twins. Astros won 9-7 to take the series in Minnesota. Josh Hader picked up the win. He's 1-0 with a 1.8 ERA. Astros are 4-5. Twins are 3-6, and more on the Astros to come a little bit later. Reds at Brewers. The Reds did score some runs on Saturday. They scored 11 of them. And then yesterday, they proceeded to score 2 while allowing 8 from the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers won that one, obviously. The Brewers moved to 5-5, and the Reds are 3-7. Drew, how was your weekend as a Reds fan?
You know, I posited this question on Twitter. Trade the Brewers to the AL Central. Trade them back to the AL Central. For the Chicago White Sox. Who says no? Like, come on. Now, I hate when they play the Brewers, because the Brewers just have their number. Obviously, they got them at the tail end of the losing streak. They decided to beat up on them on Saturday, and then Carson Spires decided to not throw another 6-inning, 1-earned run performance that he had against Texas. So, no, Spires is who we thought he was. He's number 5. He's literally just a placeholder for Andrew Abbott / Rhett Lauder, whoever decides to come back first. Super disappointing. It was a great opportunity, but I'm not super worried about the Reds just yet. But we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yes, we will. Padres and the Cubs. Padres take the series finale to avoid being swept 8-7 from the Cubs. Cubs moved to 7-5, and the Padres are now 8-2. Rays at Rangers. Rangers win that one 4-3. Rangers move to 8-2. One of the best teams in baseball to this point in the season. And the Rays fall to 4-5. Athletics at Rockies. Rockies get one in the win column. They are no longer are a part of the one win club, which now is the sole possession of the Atlanta Braves. Rockies win 12-5. They are now 2-7, and the Athletics are 4-6. Mariners at Giants. The Giants win that one. Another one of the best teams in baseball to this point in the season, and they actually lead the National League West. The Phillies say you're welcome. Giants win 5-4. They are 8-1, and the Mariners fall to 3-7. Guardians at Angels. Angels get another one in the win column. They've been surprising to this point in the season, but it is still early. 6-3 Angels won this game 6-2, and the Guardians fall to 3-6. More on the Guardians to come. And then the doubleheader of the day, Cardinals and Red Sox played two. It was a split doubleheader with the second game coming on Sunday Night Baseball. I did not watch Sunday Night Baseball. I was boycotting it because it should have been the Dodgers and Phillies. No, I was hanging out with my wife and kid. That's why I didn't watch it. But the Red Sox won game one 5-4. Aroldis Chapman picked up his second win of the year. Former Reds legend, and he has not allowed an earned run to this point in the season. And that win moved the Red Sox to 5-4, and it moved the Cardinals to 4-4. And then in the second half of the doubleheader, the Red Sox just exploded. They scored 18 runs. They did allow 7 from the Cardinals, but it moved the Red Sox to 6-4 and the Cardinals to 4-5. Miles Michaelis is who we thought he was. And he's not great. And key takeaway from that game is, where is it? Alex Bregman finished a triple shy of the cycle. He went 4-5 with 6 RBI. It was a fantastic game for Bregman, and he's had a great season so far his first year in Boston. We expected him to do great up there in Fenway. He is a pull hitter and a fly ball hitter. We expected him to feast on the monster, and he's hitting .341 so far with a .974 OPS on the year, and it's going to be a great year for Alex Bregman. That was a fantastic pickup for the Red Sox. And Drew, any final thoughts on the games from yesterday?
How about those Cubs taking 2-3 from the Padres? I knew that was going to be a good series, but Cubs now have vaulted themselves into the NL Central lead with the Cardinals faltering, and then obviously the Brewers slowly digging themselves out of their own hole. Cubs are going to be annoying this year. And I'm not ready for that because of all the Mason Cubs fans in the greater Cincinnati area. Boy, do I hate it when the Cubs come to town because they take over the Great American Small Park. But good for them. I hope they cool off soon.
Yeah, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the National League Central this year. That's for sure, with the addition of Kyle Tucker, plus their rotation, which is very good, especially with Shota Imanaga at the front of it. But enough about what happened yesterday. Let's talk about the future, Drew. And let's talk about whether or not it is time for some of these teams in baseball to panic. Because most of the teams have played roughly 10 games. Every team has played at least 9 games to this point in the season. It's still very early, but we have seen a lot of good, and we've seen a lot of bad. And for these teams in particular, it's been a surprising start to the year. And we're going to kind of just go through this the way that MLB.com standings have it set up. And we're going to start with the American League East and the Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles coming off of back-to-back playoff runs. They won the American League East in 2023. They finished with a wild card berth in 2024. And this year, they are off to a 4-6 start. Over the offseason, talked about it ad nauseum, how was very not happy with the moves that they refused to make. They did not bring back Corbin Burns. They did not add anyone to replace Corbin Burns, anyone of note to replace Corbin Burns. And the moves that they did make really didn't make any sense. Offensively, they added Tyler O'Neill and Gary Sanchez. Those were their two big moves of note on the offense. And for the pitching staff, they added Tomoyuki Sugano, whose name I'm probably butchering, and Charlie Morton. And while Sugano has done well over his first two starts, Charlie Morton has struck out a lot of guys over his first two starts. Charlie Morton still has not done well as far as keeping other teams from scoring runs. They are 4-6 to this point through their first 10 games. Is it time for the Baltimore Orioles to panic?
I think it's getting close. I do think that they're still playing well below what they should be, and also the fact that the AL East is not exactly an easy division to win in, especially with the Yanks and the Red Sox, and even if the Blue Jays are struggling. No, I'm not hitting the panic button on them just yet. I think that's probably going to be a trend, because 9 or 10 games is still not enough to get anything going. But yeah, they need to figure it out before getting left behind, because I imagine there's a good handful of wins left in this season for the Yankees and the Sox, and even the Blue Jays at that. I'm not panicking on them just yet. I think they have enough talent to get it going, but they're going to need to start getting it into gear, and at the very least take care of some of those AL East matchups that are going to be on the schedule here soon.
It's offensively, they have not been bad to this point in the year, and most of that came without Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar Henderson started the year on the injured list. He did make his season debut on Friday, but so far through 10 games, their team OPS is 743, which ranks 10th in Major League Baseball. Now, on the other hand, you have their starting rotation, which, again, talked about all offseason, was going to be weak. And to this point, through 10 games and 49 and two-thirds innings, their starting rotation has a 5.62 ERA. That is atrocious. There are only four teams in Major League Baseball with a worse starting rotation ERA than the Baltimore Orioles. And two of them we're going to talk about here in a little bit. Now, their ERA on the whole is not as bad. Still pretty bad. Not as bad. It's a 4.71. So the bullpen has been solid. Not spectacular, but solid. And that 4.71 total team ERA ranks 22nd in Major League Baseball. For me, the Orioles have the offense to put up a lot of runs, especially when they all get going, especially once Gunnar Henderson gets on track to do what Gunnar Henderson can do. But the pitching staff just isn't there. Their refusal to do anything of note in the pitching staff is what's going to hold this team back. And I think that for the Baltimore Orioles, in my opinion, I think it is time to start panicking because of how tough the American League East is, with the Boston Red Sox, the Toronto Blue Jays, the New York Yankees, and because of how tough the rest of Major League Baseball, the rest of the contenders in Major League Baseball are, because it's a pretty lopsided affair between the contenders and the people that aren't contenders. And from what we've seen so far, the Baltimore Orioles, because of their pitching staff specifically, might not be contenders. Now in the American League Central, we have another team off to a surprisingly bad start, the Cleveland Guardians. They are 3-6 on the year through 9 games, and they are another team. They won the American League Central in each of the last 2 years, I believe. I know they won it last year, and they won it pretty handily last year. And the American League Central, in their defense, is generally a crapshoot. You can never really pin down who's going to win the American League Central, because it's the craziest, wackiest division in all of baseball. And right now, it's being led by the Detroit Tigers, but we expected the Cleveland Guardians to be better than they have been to this point in the year, because of they're not on that top tier of pitching factories, but they're not that far off, and they have Jose Ramirez and Stephen Kwan on the offense who can do a lot of damage in their own right. But is it time for the Cleveland Guardians to panic?
I will say something similar to what I will say later, is the AL Central is so winnable that a slow start does not screw over any team. Anyone can win this division except the White Sox. So I'm not jumping off with the Guardians just yet. They have been known to go on runs. I like the star power of guys like Jose Ramirez. I think they'll be all right. I'm a little bit further away from panicking from them. Their rotation needs to figure it out. But I'm not panicking with the Guardians just yet. I'm pretty chill when it comes to most of these teams, just because of the sample size. I don't feel too strongly about panicking for any of them, just because it's only 9 or 10 games to this point. And like I've said, it's just the AL Central is so winnable that I'm not too worried about the Guardians. Now, if we revisit this towards the end of May and they're like 10 games under 500, then yeah, we can start smashing that button and start selling off assets. But as of right now, nah, I like the Guardians.
Yeah, so I'm kind of with you on this one. I don't think it's time for the Guardians to panic as of yet. I think that this one is more of a slow start for them because they're really not performing as we expect them to. Like, for example, their offense has a even 700 OPS, which ranks 16th in baseball. We expect them probably not to be too much better than that, but we expect them to be better than that nonetheless, especially with Jose Ramirez, who is performing as expected, and Steven Kwan, who is performing as expected. We just, the other guys around them need to get going. Now, what is surprising is the pitching staff. They are one of those two teams who have a worse starting rotation ERA than the Baltimore Orioles. Through 43 innings, their starting rotation has a 6.70 ERA, which is just absolutely atrocious. And the bullpen hasn't been much better in that regard for the Guardians because their team ERA is 5.09. So it's been the pitching that's let them down tremendously to this point, because the offense is roughly league average, and you can see it in the run differential, as they have a negative 17 in their run differential, only scoring 34 runs through the first nine games, less than four runs a game, whereas they've allowed 51 runs through the first nine games, almost six runs a game. So it's their pitching needs to get back on track, and you can expect Tanner Bibee and to be a part of that, to get back on track. He's had a rough couple of outings to start the year, but I don't think it's time to panic on the Cleveland Guardians just yet. We'll move to the American League West and the Houston Astros. Once a dynasty, potentially a dynasty no more. They are currently 4-5 through the first nine games. And it's, while over the offseason, I said multiple times that you can expect them to not be as good as they have been throughout the better part of the last decade, I don't think I quite expected them to be as bad as they have been to this point. Yes, they are 4-5, but they have not played well really in any facet of the ball game. And it's for me, it's going to be tough for the Houston Astros, but is it time to panic for the Houston Astros?
No. I don't think so, just because of how winnable the AL West is going to be. If you remember last year, obviously two very different teams, and then obviously the loss of Kyle Tucker, who was a nearly five war player, those are going to be massive. But on June 18th of last year, the Astros lost 2-0 to the White Sox, which is obviously the worst thing in the world. They were seven games under 500. They were 10 games back from the division. Fast forward, they won the division by 4.5 games. So I am not – 4 games. I'm not super concerned about them just yet, just for the simple fact that the AL West isn't exactly murderer's row. They still get to play the Angels. They still get to play – They have the Mariners and then the Angels up next, the next six games. If we're still worried about them after that, then fine. But playing the Mets, playing the Giants, the first two series of the season, not exactly the easiest start to the year. Father Time, is undefeated, and they will have to atone for their sins from 2017. But as of right now, I think that they will be okay. They're not that juggernaut that they were, that they built up, which was incredibly impressive after all those years of being atrocious. They're not quite that unless they get really, really hot. But they took 2 of 3 from the Twins this weekend, and then they have a series with the Mariners up next. I am not super worried about the Astros just yet. They've shown that they can come back. They can dig themselves out of a hole. I'm not too concerned yet.
Yet, yes. Yet is the key word. For me, I'm kind of along the same lines. I'm a little more center cut with this one. I don't think it's time to panic just yet, but I think we're getting pretty close because, I didn't think they were going to be good in the off. I didn't think they were going to be as good this year as they have been, and because of the lack of moves that they made in the offseason, and plus, as you said, losing Kyle Tucker. But I also didn't think that they would be this bad. Their offense has been absolutely atrocious to this point. Yeah. They have a 603 OPS, which ranks 27th in baseball. Really, Jose Altuve has been the only productive hitter in their lineup. And then on the defensive side of the ball, he's probably been the worst defender in Major League Baseball this year because for whatever freaking reason, they moved a bad second baseman to left field. Makes no sense. Now, the pitching staff, they do still have Framber Valdez. After that, not much to write home about. For the season, their starters ERA is 4.96, better than the other two teams we've talked about to this point, but still 21st in Major League Baseball. And then their ERA on the whole is a much more sightly 3.78. They do still have a strong bullpen, and that strong bullpen has been a big part of that success on the pitching side of the ball, because their team ERA of 3.78 ranks 10th in baseball. But the offense really has to get going, and if they don't get going soon, specifically those that the top four guys in the lineup, which excluding Jose Altuve, the three guys after Jose Altuve, Isak Paredes, Christian Walker, and Yordan Alvarez, if they cannot get going soon, then it will be time to panic for the Houston Astros. And I think I'm right there with you. If they come out of these next two series on the negative side of the win loss total, then I think it's certainly time to panic for the Houston Astros. Well, let's move over to the National League side of things, and let's talk about the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves, as I'm sure everyone who has paid any attention to baseball to this point in the year know, are the only team left in baseball with only one win. They are 1-8 on the year. They did finally get a win on Friday against the Miami Marlins, and it's just not been good for the Atlanta Braves. Their offense has been the worst in baseball to this point, with a .577 OPS, and it's just the inputs are good, the output not so much. Is it time to panic for the Atlanta Braves?
I am probably closer when it comes to the Braves and panicking. But no, but I will say that it's going to be significantly harder for the Braves to dig themselves out of this hole in the NL East because, as you know, the Mets are good, the Phillies are good, the Nationals are going to be, you know, decent, and you keep saying they're going to be annoying. Miami is Miami, so but their lineup is really bad. In terms of OPS plus, they have three guys that are over 100, and one of them is Reds legend Stuart Fairchild. Talk about a tiny sample size. Matt Olson is doing his job. Marcell Ozuna is doing his job. He's walked. Marcell Ozuna has walked 13 times already to this point. He leads all batters. But their OPS plus as a team is sitting at 63. They've got two guys in the negative in OPS plus. Like, 100 is league average. Being under it is below league average. Negative, you're a triple-A hitter at this point. Like, what is going on? Jared Kelenic, 16. I think the Braves are closer to panicking, which is wild considering how good they've been. Now, obviously, we'll have to see what happens when they get their stars back, like Spencer Strider and Acuna. Ronald Acuna. But this might be one of them seasons where you tell those guys to just get healthy. We're not rushing you back, and we'll get you some game time later on this summer to get you back into it, because goodness gracious, it's concerning. I will say that it's definitely concerning. I read what Lindsey Crosby, former host, I read what he does. I listen to his little bits on Locked On, and I'll be. This is probably the one that I'm most concerned about.
Yeah, it's going into the weekend, I would have said no, it's not time to panic. But with what the Phillies did with the Dodgers over the weekend, I think it's a lot closer to time to panic than it was going into the weekend. Because as you pointed out, the National League East is arguably the best division in baseball because of how top heavy it is with the Braves, Phillies, and Mets. And entering this season, the Braves and Phillies were two of the three World Series favorites along with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And now I think it's only two of those teams who are World Series favorites. I still think the Braves can make the playoffs, but once they get to those playoffs, I'm not sure how good they're going to be. I gave the team OPS earlier. As far as their starting rotation goes and their pitching, it hasn't been bad. Their starting rotation has a 4.14 ERA over 45 innings. And again, that's without Spencer Strider. And so once he comes back, you can expect that to lower tremendously. And then their ERA on the whole is 4.36. So the bullpen has been a little bit worse in the rotation, but not by too much. And it's just, by the way, you can throw the 30-minute podcast out the window. I don't think that's going to be a thing anymore. I think we're going to go over 30 pretty religiously. There was a reason we held it to 30 minutes beforehand. That reason's gone. So just throw that out the window. But it's the Braves, I think we're a lot closer to time. I don't think it's time just yet. It's going to be this series this week that starts tomorrow with the Phillies is going to be telling on whether or not it is time to panic for the Atlanta Braves. If the Braves can win two of three, nothing to worry about. If the Phillies win two of three or even sweep the Braves, there's a lot to worry about because the Braves have their best pitchers going in this matchup with Chris, or probably going with Chris Sale, Kenny Powers lookalike dude. I can't remember his real name right now, and Spencer Schwellenbach. But it's going to be a fantastic series with the Phillies and the Braves, and we're gonna preview that tomorrow. And then now today we're gonna move to the NL Central and take it away, Drusiv. Let's talk about your Reds. Is it time to panic for the Cincinnati Reds?
On one hand, yes, because the Castellinis still own this team. On the other hand, no. The Castellinis are not at all concerned with winning baseball games, despite that beautiful little letter that they penned in 2006. Mm-hmm. They just don't care about winning baseball games, and it's quite honestly disappointing. Over on Athlon Sports, I kind of dove into this. I am not concerned about the Reds just yet because I know what they can be. I know that they can explode for 10 runs. I know that the rotation is awesome. The Reds' top three pitchers right now, Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, Brady Singer, they have a combined ERA of 1.96 with 36 strikeouts, and that's with Nick Lodolo only striking out 5. I'm not worried about him just yet. I think that when Austin Hayes comes back, that'll help. When Tyler Stevenson comes back, that'll definitely help. Even though Jose Trevino has been honestly a massive surprise back there and hitting, he's not Tyler Stevenson. There are plenty of reasons for concern other than the fact that the Castellinis own this team. A couple of guys in the bullpen that they expected to be locked down, like Sam Moll, have been awful this year. Now, the bullpen itself in general has been pretty good. Tony Santion, Graham Ashcraft, Emilio Pagan, and Taylor Rogers have not allowed a run all year. It's the unfortunate thing about when you lose three straight 1-0 games, the pitching takes a back seat to the fact that the lineup decided not to show up. The pitching has been fantastic for the Reds outside of last night's game. And even then, that was the 5-starter, Carson Spires. So I'm not too worried about the Reds just yet. Now, they do go up against the Giants to start this week, who have lost all of one game, and that was in the opening series against the Reds on Saturday. If the Reds come out of that with 2 out of 3, I'm definitely hype. If they win 1 of 3, not as hype. And then obviously if they get swept, you know, It is what it is. But I'm not super concerned about the Reds just yet. I know what they can be. It's just super disappointing that, you know, Matt McClain is dealing with a hamstring injury now, and Ellie De La Cruz is still being Ellie De La Cruz. He leads the team with, I think, 12 hits at this point, and he has one stolen back. He was thrown out last night trying to steal, and he was out by a mile. He got an atrocious jump. But I am not too concerned about the Reds just yet. I am more concerned about how high the Ohio River is getting outside of Great American Ballpark, honestly.
Yeah, it's they are a much better team than they played to this point. They have the same record as the Pittsburgh Pirates, 3-7, and we expect the Cincinnati Reds to be far and away better than the Pittsburgh Pirates. A little more context here on the statistical side. As a team, the Reds have an OPS of 621. We expect that to be much higher. Now, I will say they have scored 39 runs this year. 25 of those have come in two games. So in their other eight games, they have scored 14 runs. But it's not time to panic for the Reds. Their starters ERA is eighth in baseball at 3.18, and then their ERA on the whole is ninth in baseball at 3.41. So pitching has not been the issue. It's just getting the rest of the offense to kind of get on board and put those runs together and save some for other ball games instead of just the two that they've scored them in to this point. Not time to panic for the Cincinnati Reds. And our final team that we are going to talk about today on Is It Time to Panic or Not? The National League West, the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, they do have the best record of the teams that we've talked about to this point in this segment of the show today at 5-5. However, their pitching has been absolutely atrocious. Their starters ERA for the year, again, worse than the Orioles. Not as bad as the Cleveland Guardians, but 5.96. It is 27th in Major League Baseball. Corbin Carroll, while he did kind of sort of get off to a slow start, he has started to kind of turn that around a little bit. His batting average ain't the greatest, but his OPS is above 900. They put Ketel Marte on the injured list on Saturday with a hamstring strain, and manager Tori Lavulu, or however you pronounce his name, said that he is expecting Marte to miss weeks and not days. So Marte is going to be on the injured list for a while. The National League West, ahead of the Arizona Diamondbacks, the San Francisco Giants in first, the Los Angeles Dodgers in second, virtual tie, San Diego Padres in third. Between the three of those teams, they have a combined 5 losses. Is it time for the Diamondbacks to panic?
You know, I lied earlier. Yeah, I think it's time to panic with the Diamondbacks. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with the trade deadlines. They have a number of guys that they probably could offload to rebuild a little bit. That Ketel Marte injury is massive, unfortunately. Corbin Carroll can't do it all himself. Eugenio Suarez can't do it all himself. The man, you know, he's got 6 hits, 5 home runs, I should say. He's very boom or bust. And I mean, he kind of always has been, but that's always what made it fun, because he's got a great personality to go with it. And I love Eugenio Suarez. Please come back to Cincinnati. But yeah, the Diamondbacks are so disappointing. They could dig themselves out, end up over 500, and still finish fourth in that division. It's disgusting. So yeah, if I have to choose one to panic on, it won't be the Braves. It'd be these guys, just because of how much of an uphill battle it would be to get out of this. It's super disappointing, because they were fun to watch when they made it all the way to the World Series and everything, because you just don't expect a team like the Diamondbacks to do it. But yeah, it's super disappointing. Corbin Carroll deserves better.
Yeah. Whenever we start making merch for this show, I think that's going to be the first t-shirt. It's just going to be like 1 through 99, since we can't put player names on the shirts or whatever. 1 through 99 deserves better, and then it'll be in the different team colors. It's not looking good in Arizona right now. Zach Gallen is the only pitcher that has been worth his salt to this point in the season, and he still has an ERA above 3, which, again, is not bad by any means, but it's not great when the rest of your team's ERA are above 4 and 5. And the offense has been good. Their OPS is 800, and they're 5th in baseball with their team OPS, but they play in one of the most hitter-friendly ballparks in the sport. Like, it's right up there with Coors Field and the Great American Small Park with how hitter friendly it is, and it's one of the highest scoring ballparks in the sport, even more so than Coors Field, because of just it's inside. They still use a humidor, and just it's how expansive the outfield is, and it's still easy to hit home runs to the corners. And so their offense is good, but you expect them to be even better than that, especially when last year their team OPS led or was 2nd in baseball. It's less than 800, but still 2nd in baseball, better than they are now as far as rankings. It's 777, and they're 5th in baseball right now behind the Yankees and their Torpedo Bats, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Boston Red Sox, and
the Detroit Tigers.
So it's I think it's time to panic for the Arizona Diamondbacks. As usual, the emo kid on the show is the more pessimistic one on the show, as I have always been for the entirety of my run here on First Pitch. But with more teams that it's time to panic for. But it's the West is tough, man. The National League West is tough, especially with what the three teams ahead of them have shown to this point in the season. And I think it's time to panic for the Arizona Diamondbacks. But a few teams that it's not time to panic for are the teams that are in action today, unless, of course, they lose or lose one of their star players. And at 3:10 p.m. Eastern, we do have one day game today, kind of early afternoon. Yankees at the Tigers. Carlos Rodon at Casey Mize. Yankees look to move to 7-3, and the Tigers look to keep from moving to 5-5. 6:40 p.m. Eastern, the Cardinals go to Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates. We've got Liberatore at Mlodzinski, not even going to try there. Dodgers at Nationals at 6:45 p.m. Eastern. Dustin May at Mackenzie Gore. I think this is one of the few pitching matchups to watch today. Mackenzie Gore did show in his last start that it was just the shadows that saw his success in the strikeout department against the Phillies on opening day. And Dustin May is Dustin May. He's going to strike a lot of guys out. It's going to be a fun matchup, and maybe the Nationals can sneak across and win over the Dodgers. We'll have to wait and see. 6:45 p.m. Eastern, also Blue Jays at Red Sox. Lucas at Dick Fitz, so that's a good pitching matchup there. And then 7:10 p.m. Eastern, Marlins at the Mets. The Mets continue their easy run of games to start the year, facing the Marlins for the 2nd time in as many weeks. The Marlins are sending out TBD. TBD. Scary matchup there for Kodai Senga and the Mets. 7:40 p.m. Eastern, another strong pitching matchup. Texas Rangers at Chicago Cubs. Nathan Eovaldi, 1-0 record, 1.20 ERA across his first 2 starts at Justin Steele. He's made 3 starts so far because of the Tokyo series. He's 2-1 with a 6.89 ERA. After that Tokyo series and his first start, he had a good start in his last outing. I expect a good pitching matchup in this one in Chicago. 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Twins at Royals. Simeon Woods Richardson at Michael Lorenzen. Don't expect much from this. Both teams are below 500. Expect the Royals to win, but expect a lot of scoring in that one as well. Orioles at D-Bags, 9:40 p.m. Eastern. Zach Eflin at Zach Gallen. Battle of the Zachs. And both guys have an ERA below 4. And like I said earlier, Zach Gallen has been the only pitcher worth his salt for the Diamondbacks. Two teams that probably time to panic. And we're going to see which one can come out on top of that one. Astros at Mariners, 9:40 p.m. Eastern. Hayden Wesneski at Logan Gilbert. Astros look to move to 500. Mariners look to keep from falling even further below 500 in that one. 9:45 p.m. Eastern, Cincinnati Reds at San Francisco Giants. Hunter Green deserves better at Logan Webb. How you feel about this one, Drew?
I hope they give me something to stay up to watch. Because I think Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, Hunter Green, it should be Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo 1-2 this week. I make it fun, make it competitive. The opening series was competitive. The Reds were in line to win on opening day. It imploded for four runs in the ninth, one on Saturday, and then lost by three on Sunday, thanks to two runs in the eighth. They're right there. And if they're going to figure it out, the Giants would be a good time to figure it out. Anyone can beat up on the Pirates. I say that as if the Reds haven't struggled against the Pirates for some reason. No, I'm looking forward to it. I dislike West Coast trips because the Reds seem to suck out there because of how of the time difference. And also, I don't like staying up till midnight. I just really hope that they can squeak. If they can manage 2 of 3, I will be over the moon. That Thursday pod, I'm going to be all over the place. It's going to be great.
Yeah, that is a late one. And you are in the Eastern time zone, so that's even later for you than it is for me. And I'm going to be asleep before that game has its first pitch at 8:45 my time. So, yeah, no, I'm out on that one. It is a good pitching matchup, though. One of the four good pitching matchups of the day. I do look forward to looking at the box score in the morning and seeing how Hunter Green and Logan Webb performed against each other. And then the nightcap, 10:05 p.m. Eastern, Padres at Athletics. Michael King at Luis Severino. Padres look to move to 9-2 and bounce back from dropping 2 of 3 to the Cubs over the weekend, and the Athletics look to move to 5-6. Any more thoughts, Drew, on any of these games that we have on the slate today?
That Rangers-Cubs series kicking off is going to be really fun. Last time we saw Nathan Eovaldi, he pitched the complete game shutout. I almost said no hitter. The Reds got hits. They got 4 hits. Come on now. He pitched the complete game shutout with 8 strikeouts. In his first start, he pitched 6 innings, 2 earned runs, struck out 9. I don't know what it is. The man's ancient, but he's still tossing it like the rest of them. I'm really interested to see what he puts up against this Cubs lineup, because the only batter that's faced Nathan Eovaldi more than a few times is Kyle Tucker, and Kyle Tucker has a 1.065 OPS against him. Against everyone else, let's see if Nathan Eovaldi can keep it up. Complete game shutouts are honestly incredibly rare in today's game. You got to be special or facing a really, really bad lineup to do it. And it could be both. It could be one. So I'm really looking forward to that. The Rangers are really surprising at this point, 8-2. If they can knock the Cubs down a peg or two, that'd be dope.
Yeah, if we come back tomorrow, if I wake up tomorrow morning and I see that Nathan Eovaldi has thrown another Maddox in back-to-back starts, I'm gonna have to find an even goofier picture of him for the thumbnail for that episode. The new face of Maddox times two. But yeah, it's a great slate of day games. No, not a great slate of day games, great slate of ball games with one day game. And it's going to be fun regardless of there only being 4 great pitching matchups and a lot of mid. It's still baseball, and baseball is back, and we love some baseball around here. Thank you all for joining us today here on the First Pitch Podcast, your daily source of news, notes, and updates on all things Major League Baseball. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. Turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when another episode just like this goes live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating. Share it with your friends. Let them know where they can get their source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. Send them to firstpitchpodcast.com and check out the First Pitch newsletter. Like I said, today we talked about the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. extension, Ketel Marte hitting the injured list, and Blake Snell hitting the injured list. Link for the newsletter is in the description of this video. It is free to subscribe, though we do appreciate any and all paid subscriptions as they help keep the bills on around here. And tomorrow, because I meant to do it today and I forgot to tease it, so I'm not going to do it now. I'm going to tease it now for tomorrow. Going to have an announcement, something big coming for y'all this weekend. More content. Drew knows what it is, but he ain't going to say it either, because we're going to wait until tomorrow to let you know. And until tomorrow, this has been First Pitch.